Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP has been serving people all across the U.S. for more than 20 years, promising no less than their very best attention and commitment to making sure each of their clients has access to the answers they need, always being accessible. Their focus is on managing risk while always looking for opportunities. Since their own money is invested right alongside their clients, their focus is on results. To see about their targeted investment programs, when you're ready, just click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com. End of commercial, and now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, December 19th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk, and the year is coming to an end, but you still have time to make some last-minute tax changes before we get to 2017, so that's what we're going to talk about today. But overall, the goal of the show is to help you become a better-than-average investor, right? Above average. And most people get sucked into the pitfalls that go along with investing, that go along with the emotions of investing, and we try to be a source of straight answers and useful information to help you make the best possible decisions. Now, you've heard Steve and I talk about our rule: we don't invest in companies that do not make money, but don't be misled into thinking we're saying just because a company is profitable that it's a good investment, right? Any company that is to be considered as an investment must be profitable on a consistent basis and somewhat predictable too. And there are many different ways that one can assess a company's level of profitability. It's not just earnings per share or net income, right? There's return on equity. Now, this number is the theoretical return the company is making for its shareholders. Now, we like to see this number in the high teens or higher. And it's a very important measure when analyzing profitability. But there are caveats that can raise red flags. Like if a company has too much leverage, meaning too much debt, it can make it look like the return on equity is very, very good, when in reality, they're just using a lot of debt on their balance sheet to amplify returns in the near term. But that makes them highly risky in a potential downturn, a recession, right? Or just a change in their business dramatically. And part of return equity is another measure is return on assets, okay? And once you determine return on assets, you then multiply that by leverage, the leverage ratio of their balance sheet, and you get return on equity. Now, typically, return assets vary between industries. So when you're comparing one company versus another, you have to look at other companies within the industry. You can't compare, say, a retail company to a food distribution company or a technology company. Right? Technology companies tend to carry return equity, return asset figures in the high double digits. Whereas retail companies, you know, their margins are very small and return equity tends to be modest. That doesn't mean you focus in just high ROA or high ROE industries, but when you're comparing multiple industries or multiple stocks, you must compare them within their own industry. Then there's gross margins. This shows the percentage of revenue a company keeps after paying for the products it sold, the employees that provided the service, all the overhead that goes to a business, right? And that's gross margins. So that's basically if you sell something, what are the basic costs, right? Not the all-in costs, but the basic costs for that particular product. Right. For Apple, for example, you sold an iPhone. What are the costs of the inputs to that iPhone? But then there's marketing and stuff on top of that. And once you account for that, then you get net margins. Right? You have net margins calculates in the cost of the rent that you might have on buildings and equipment, marketing costs, insurance, taxes, R&D, etc. So net margins are the percentage of revenue a company ultimately gets to keep at the end, right? And that's what goes to the bottom line. That's what's used in our return on asset calculation, return on equity calculations. So all these figures go into the analysis of how well a company performs in context to its peers. You can't compare McDonald's to Apple, right? You can't compare Walmart to a utility company. They're all very different businesses. So always look for firms with improving or steady profitability. But as with any fundamental figure, these are all about fundamentals. They're just one factor that you must take into context, along with dozens of other ones as well, in order to make a sound financial decision. Now, can we help you make a decision today? That's what we're here for. We're here to answer any of your money questions. And as always, we're up for any of them on Invest Talk. You can give us a call. And let's begin now with this caller.
Hi, guys. Can you explain what is meant by entering a limit order versus a stop loss? Not sure what the differences are, so I wanted to see if you could explain how those work. Thank you.
Well, limit order is simply specifying the price that you're willing to buy or sell a security. Right. So if you're looking to buy it, maybe it's trading at $40.22 and you don't want to pay more than $40.10. You can put a limit order for $40.10. Same thing on the sell side. You want to sell a stock, it's trading at, same thing, say $40.22, and you don't want to sell it for any lower than $40.30. You put in an order, $40.30, and if it gets there, you'll sell it. The market will, your transaction will go off. So that's simply what a limit order is. Now, what a stop loss order is say, let's go back to the same numbers again, $40.22, and if it goes below 40, you want to get out. You want to be done with it. You know, it's maybe that's breaking support or whatever that is. You can put a limit order or a stop loss order in that if it hits $40 a share, it triggers a market order and it sells at market. Now, most likely you'll get $40 or around there for your stock. The issue, however, sometimes is, say there's an earnings announcement. Maybe it closed the previous day at $40.22, and there's an earnings announcement. Or maybe it's an announcement on another company in the industry that's very related, so it doesn't even have to be that company. Right? Or it could be a regulatory change or a lawsuit. Who knows what it is? A hacking scandal like Yahoo's having, right? All of these things can make the stock jump down quickly. So say the next day you have a stop loss order at 40, and the next day, because of the news, it opens at $37.28. You're going to get triggered a market order, and you're going to sell it at $37.28. You're not selling it for 40. So that's the risk with a stop loss order. Okay? So just be aware of that. Understand that. You know, it's not perfect, but that's the risk that, you know, you could have a gap down through your stop loss order and it might go off at a much lower price than you expected. Now, 5 tax moves to make before 2017. That's our main talking point today, but I have some other ones as well. Housing permits. What are the housing numbers that came out last week? What do they mean? Interest rates have been going up. What does that mean for the market? What does that mean for real estate market, stock market, etc.? We're going to touch on that. That's something that I discussed in my Invest Talk View segment this week. So if you haven't watched that, you can always go to the Invest Talk page on Facebook and check that out. I also want to talk about these rising mortgage rates. It's not a reason to panic, but what does it mean for profitability as well, overall? And then possible retirement policy changes in the Trump administration. What potentially could we see in the next couple years, right? So 888-99 chart is our number, 888-992-4278. We want to hear from you. I want to get your call in as soon as possible. Don't wait till the end of the hour. Let's check on the market today. We had the Dow up 40, the S&P was up 4.5, the NASDAQ was up 20. Very modest up day. What's interesting to me is you saw a real reflation trade start after the Trump election, right? The inflation expectations started to rise quickly. And starting on about the 12th of last week, about a week ago, last week, that has changed. That's turned, which is pretty interesting to me. So we've seen a lot of some of the commodity stocks come back down to earth that were doing really well because of potential inflation expectations going forward. And that's kind of been reversed. So I think though it's telling me that the market wants to reverse, but it might not happen until the beginning of the year because a lot of people don't want to take gains this year and pay that higher tax rate when next year we might have a lower tax regime under Trump. So I think the market for the rest of the year will be kind of choppy to maybe modestly down. I don't think it'll be anything major, but I certainly don't think there's a ton of upside from here. Now, this is Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all stocks and bonds. Maybe a question about selling your home, annuities, your 401k, deciding whether to downsize from your home or not, refinance. Let's talk about it. Any money questions are welcome. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. It's our 24/7 listener line.
Hey, Invest Talk. Love the show. I'm calling to ask about VTSMX, the Total Stock Market Index Fund. It's a mutual fund. Is this prudent to hold on to long term, more than 5 years? Love to hear your opinion and love the show. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund. This is a very large mutual fund. It has about $500 billion in assets. And just like a lot of people these days, you're looking at an index fund. And this is a company. This is a fund that encompasses a lot of the equity universe, not just here domestically. It is 100 all domestic. So all domestic. Biggest holding is Apple, then Microsoft, Exxon, Johnson & Johnson, Amazon. Those are the top five holdings. And so you get a broad mix of stocks, large and mid. My biggest worry is like I've been talking about before with indexing. While the expense ratio is cheap, about 0.16, 16 basis points, that's pretty low. And so holding that long term is fine. But understand that I do think that the next bear market could be pretty wrenching because so many people are in these index funds and they probably don't understand the risk that's involved. And you need to understand that. You need to understand that there is a significant risk to something like this because in a bear market, it will get hit hard. For example, in 2007, it peaked at about $37 a share and it hit a low of $16 a share. So it went down over 50%, about 60% from its high. Are you able and willing to handle that volatility? That's what you need to ask yourself. If you are, honestly, you are, and you're willing to buy more as it goes down, consistently buy in over time, you'll do fine. But understand that there's volatility, and you need to be willing and able to handle that. And that goes with any index fund out there. If anybody is holding index funds on the large equity markets, the S&P, the Dow, the NASDAQ, whatever that is, understand that these can go down a lot, and bear markets happen quickly. And I think the next one is going to be probably pretty intense because of this, because so many people are concentrated in the indexes. And that's worrisome. Now, our direct line is 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk live for the next about 40 minutes, so get your call in as soon as possible. That's 888-992-4278. Let's go to Ghoul in Fremont. How you doing?
Hi, Dustin.
Yeah, how's it going?
I've been enjoying your show, driving back home. I have a question on something that I heard on the air on another radio station.
Mm-hmm.
saying that if I have more than $250,000 in my 401k account, I have to declare that to IRS in the end of the year. Is that true?
I've never heard that. I mean, they know the company that's reporting that holds your 401k, they report that to the government. So I don't know why you'd need to do a special. There should be no special disclosure or something like that.
Okay. So thanks a lot.
Is that at your current employer?
Yeah, it's a previous employer.
Previous employer. Okay. Well, I mean, you should be rolling that into an IRA. We certainly can help you with that if you want. And if you hold on, our engineer will get that your number from you. But I don't see. There's no reason why you need to declare it or anything like that. And there's no $250,000 mark is not a special, number or anything like that. So that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, hold on, and our engineer will get your number. Thanks, Cole. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, we're approaching the end of the year. We have about 20 minutes left in the show. Sorry, 30 minutes left in the show, so give us a call if you have any questions. But we're approaching the end of the year. We have just a couple weeks left. And so you need to think about some potential tax plays, right? You don't want to do it the last couple days. You need to start really thinking about it now, because we get this a lot. We have clients that call us for the required minimum distribution from the IRA 2 days before the year ends, and we've got to move money around, and sometimes it's difficult. So you want to really not lag on this. This is the week to really get anything you're going to do going, okay? So number one is you can be savvy about giving back. And you can actually donate your required minimum distribution from your IRA directly to a qualified charity. And that won't increase your adjusted gross income. So that's something to think about. I know a lot of people don't like taking their RMDs in their IRA because they have to report it, right? That's income to them. But donating that to a good charity might be a solid answer. Number two. Ramp up your retirement savings. The end of the year is the perfect time to think about your current situation and assess whether you're still on track to meet your retirement goals. If not, why don't you call me? We can talk about that. Now, if you, in 2016, you can contribute up to $6,000 in an IRA, an extra $1,000 if you're over 50 as a catch-up, up to $18,000 in your 401k. So you can talk to your HR department and boost that amount. Maybe give your whole, all your paycheck for the next two paychecks or whatever till the end of the year into your 401k to try to max that out. Something you should think about. Number three, consider converting a Roth IRA, or sorry, a regular IRA into a Roth. Hopefully you have both and you can just move money from your IRA into your Roth, and that would be a partial conversion. It doesn't have to be a full IRA into a Roth IRA. It can just be a partial. Now, you don't want to push yourself into a higher tax bracket by doing that, so that's something you need to discuss with your CPA. But especially if you're in a low, maybe it's a year where you have low income or you have high deductions or net operating losses from a business, something like that, that this is a good year or is a good time to do a Roth conversion like that, okay? Number four, tax loss selling. Harvest some taxes. Maybe you're down on some positions and you have some capital gains this year. You want to offset that by taking some losses before the end of the year. And you can even use up to $3,000 of net loss to mitigate any income, right? And then number five, take a second look at your stock options. If you have any stock options vesting next year, that's something that you need to talk to your CPA about, because there could be some changes in the new year. So those are the five that you really need to think about before the end of the year to help hopefully mitigate your tax bill when you pay it next year for this year, or maybe potentially mitigate what you are liable for next year. All right. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question right now on Invest Talk. Now, higher mortgage rates are here. What does that mean? And that has fed through to the housing market in November. Is that going to continue? I think that's something that we need to discuss. You know, rates are now are still under 5%, and that's been the norm for the past decade or so. But what's the long-term average? So where what do you need to be thinking about when it comes to real estate going forward and where mortgage rates might be over the more medium term, long term, and how that might affect your buying or selling decision? Now we're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. I'm going to get to that housing discussion after the break. But you can get through right now. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. We're about halfway through the show, and there's plenty of time to get your question in, but give us a call right now. And this is Invest Talk.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Have you done your homework? There's much to learn, and thankfully there are many sources of knowledge. Visit our recommended book section on investtalk.com. Read about the books that maybe you should be reading. And some great gift ideas are there, too. Listening to Invest Talk for Monday, December 19th. 2017 promises to be a year of change for retirement accounts, more automation and regulation. How your 401k plan will change in 2017, that's one of our talking points next time. For right now, Justin wants to hear your talking point. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Steve in Oakland. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, how's it going, Justin?
Doing
I really
fantastic.
Like listening to you guys' show.
Appreciate it.
I have a quick question. I have I was wondering what you think about Potash Corporation, POT. I've purchased it a while back, and I'm up 16%. I don't know. I've been looking at the way it was down today, about 1%. I was wondering what your thoughts are in terms of whether I should take some profits off the table or maybe put some more money into Potash. I think it's a good stock. I saw that they acquired a company in Brazil, and just wondering what your thoughts are on the company.
Yeah, we own this for managed some of our managed accounts. We're up similar to you. We bought it around the 16 range. Now it's trading just below 18 at the close today. I actually still like it. Good fundamentals. It's a value stock, solid dividend. It's certainly pulled back pretty quick here, but I do think it's going to be into some big support around 1750 or so, 1730, somewhere in there. And, I bought it for a new client, not it, but one of its, so we own this and another in the industry, for a new account today. So I think this is a temporary pullback, and I still like potash. And I do think that agriculture prices are ready to go higher. And if you look at a DBA, is a good indicator of that. So I'm still a fan of potash. So if you have a longer term time horizon, you know, I would definitely think about adding more.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Justin. Take care.
No problem, Steve. Thanks for calling. That was potash. POT is the symbol. Now, mortgage rates are on the rise. We're at about 4.4% on the 30-year treasury, thirty-year fixed rate mortgage, and that's according to Mortgage News Daily that I saw today. And a lot of people are probably saying, "Wow, that's high, right?" Well, as a matter of fact, it's not. It's not very high. I know people have gotten used to mortgage rates below the 5% level for a decade or so. But this is abnormal, and I think you need to start thinking of the housing market in context to a mortgage rate that's closer to the long-term average, which is about 7%, okay? Now, before 1990, it was 10% going back, but so you have to think of 7%, 8% mortgage as something that's more normal. Now, home prices have been going up because of tight inventory, low unemployment, and that has really pinched buyers in recent years because of profitability. It's really tightened profitability in a lot of areas. So higher interest rates are certainly going to temper the rise in prices. Okay? So at these levels, the marginal buyer is definitely going to be pushed out of the marketplace. So it's not going to kill everybody, but certain people, you know, a low single-digit percentage of the buyers out there are no longer going to be able to afford, you know, that starter home. And that's really where this hits hardest first. And the reason is because the first-time home buyer in that starter home, they're putting 3% down. So that means they're financing 95% of the purchase price. And when the cost of capital, the cost of that debt goes up, they're feeling it the most as a percentage. Whereas your kind of middle market high-end buyer, they're putting 20% down or more because they have a lot of equity in their previous home, or they just have a lot of cash because they're somewhat wealthy, have a good job, etc. And it hurts that market a little bit less. But what happens is those people that are coming from a starting home, the move-up market is going to be weaker. Why? Because they may have that starter home that they're expecting a first-time home buyer to buy, and the first-time home buyers are going away faster, right? Or they're willing to pay less. It means they have less equity to put in the next home, so that limits their bidding on the move-up home, right? So that's kind of the progression that you're going to see with higher interest rates, and it's going to be felt the most in the more expensive markets, like the San Francisco Bay Area is certainly going to feel it. Manhattan, anything that's kind of high-end here in California, I think broadly, it's certainly going to have a bigger effect than it will kind of, say, in Ohio or Texas or Florida, those type of areas, okay? And certainly areas that are tight from a affordability standpoint, that's definitely going to make that worse in those areas. Now, mortgage loan applications dropped 4% last week. And you're seeing this knock-on effect, and I think you're going to continue to see it as long as mortgage rates are in the 4.25% to 4.5% range. I think that's certainly a strong headwind to prices. Now, I don't think it's going to kill prices, meaning a depreciation in prices, pricing going down, but I do think it will temper the growth. Now, what level will prices start going down? I think it's about 4.75, 5%, somewhere in there. That's when you'll probably see, especially in the California markets, prices go down because just the cost of capital is just going to be too much. And I think you could see that by the end of next year. Maybe not in the near term. I think interest rates have gone a little bit too far, too fast. So I think you're going to see a near-term drop. And this is something that I discussed a little bit more aggressively or in a longer form in my Invest Talk View segment that came out over the weekend. So if you want to watch that, that is recorded actually from my home in Laguna Beach, California. And you can check that out by going to the Invest Talk or the KPP Financial page on Facebook or the Invest Talk channel on YouTube as well. Now, what's in it for insiders? You can become an Invest Talk insider and find out. One thing, webinars. And you'll have access to a whole library of webinars that you can play anytime. It's free. Never a charge for any of the useful content that we have. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab.
We have an award-winning system that can help you determine your optimum level of risk. But just as important, it can tell you if your current portfolio is exposing you to too much risk. Or maybe not enough. You may find that your current investments are too conservative, that you should be taking more risk because of your age, temperament, or life situation. Give it a try. It's our free risk analysis tool. It's there for you on investtalk.com.
Hello, Steve or Justin. This is Don from Wisconsin. I have interest in Hanes Brands, symbol HBI, and would like to know your thoughts around an entry point. It's fallen quite a bit. Fundamentals look good. Prospects for the future are positive, but the stock has fallen quite a bit and still falling. So I'm interested in what you think for an entry point. Love your show. Thanks. Bye.
All right, looking at Hanes Brands. This is a pretty large company. Its market cap is $8.2 billion, so it's kind of middle market, mid-cap stock, 2% yield. Forward P is only 10. That's pretty cheap. Let me look at kind of the key ratios on this. We have good, strong cash flows, positive cash flows, only briefly dipped negative in the recession 2008. So it's been positive otherwise over the last 10 years. You have a high return on equity, 41%. Return on invested capital, always kind of in the 10% range, which I like. It just recently started paying a dividend, so its payout ratio is actually pretty good. It's only 38%. Certainly could be raised. I'm trying to figure out why it's going down so much. It certainly was overpriced at about $34 a share when it hit its high. Now it's at 23. It's starting to get attractive. Let me look. This is a decent entry point around 22. But it's still pretty bearish. It's not looking like it wants to bottom. I'm not seeing a decent spike in yield, but it's not dramatic. I'm going to say $18. It's at $21.66 today. $18 would be a great entry point. $14 would be fantastic. I'm not sure it gets down there, but $18 is where I would start to pick this up. I like what you're looking at. It's kind of anti-cyclical in a lot of ways. What does it sell? Underwear, right? Hanes brands. So I'm a fan of that, and it's a consistent business over time, consistent profitability. I like they just started paying a dividend that certainly can go up, and its profitability numbers are always very strong. Let's look at its debt. Ooh, that's my biggest worry is its debt. Its financial leverage is six times, which is pretty big, and that means its return assets are about 7. And that's what gives it that high return on equity. Remember I was telling you at the beginning of the show about how return on equity can be a little deceiving because of high leverage? Well, this is a good example of that. Not to say it completely scares me off from it, but it's something to think about, something to worry about. I would like to see them use that strong cash flow, positive cash flow, to pay down some debt. But I like what you're looking at, and I would enter it at about $18 a share. Let's go to Andy in, is it Addy in Irvine? Addy, how you doing?
Yes, all right. Good, thank you. I have a question about ABX, Springs Gold. I'm holding some position at $17, my average price.
Mm-hmm.
And with the year up, as far as the rates going up and the dollar getting stronger, it seems like the only outcome that this stock would go up is if we have inflation. How do you feel about holding it for a year or just dumping it at this point?
I'm a fan. We actually hold this for some of our managed accounts. We bought it much less lower. We bought you're talking about Barrick Gold, right? ABX.
Yes.
Yeah, we bought it at about 6, so we're still up, dramatically on it, even though it's pulled back from 22 area. But we still like it, and I think it'll still be good going into next year. I think the negativity on the gold sector is kind of hitting a fever pitch at the moment, and it's still a good buying opportunity.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
No problem. Let's go to Robert in Pleasanton. How are you doing, Robert?
Hey, pretty good, Justin. How are you?
Doing good. What can I do for you?
Hey, just a question. I have a friend that works at a company. And I was talking to him the other day, and it sounds like they are in a growth mode. And I'm just kind of curious to get your take on this. That's a company that does a lot of auctions, automobile auctions to dealers.
Mm-hmm.
Stock symbol is KAR.
Mm-hmm. KAR. This is a company that, like you said, it's an auction company. They auction off used cars and salvage cars, etc. And they're doing well because of car sales, right? And usually you're trading an old car, and the dealerships, they're not usually selling those cars that you're trading in. They send them to an auction house, and that's typically what price you're getting for your trade-in is what the dealerships is getting, right? So if car sales start to decline, that's certainly going to hurt a company like – what's the name of this? Car Auction Services, KAR, right? So you're thinking about buying this?
Yeah, possibly.
You know, I think it's okay. I don't love the chart. It's somewhat bearish. It had a big drop in October, November, rallied a little bit, but you know, it's the MACD is not looking very healthy. Kind of some of the technical indicators I'm looking at doesn't look that healthy. From a valuation standpoint, I would say it's probably at value. I wouldn't say it's undervalued. I don't think it's overvalued. Just kind of at value. My biggest worry is this is going to be volatile because of this industry that it's in. Like I said, if car sales start to decline, that is something that will hit this industry hard. So, you know, I don't love it, to be honest with you. It's okay, but you're definitely going to have car sales continue at a strong pace. And with interest rates going up, the cost to finance could also go up as well. Used car dealers are going to have more trouble because, you know, a lot of car companies, they do 0% financing. Well, you usually don't get that on used cars, right? So it's going to hurt the used car market, I think, more than most. And so that's why, you know, I don't love it.
Okay. Thanks very much.
No problem, Robert. Let's go to Dave in New York. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, good. I wanted to ask you about, Applied Materials.
Okay.
Your thoughts and maybe a good entry.
I actually like Applied Materials. This is on my watch list to buy. It's a little overbought here. It's a little extended. So that's what kind of worries me. And that's why we haven't bought it. And I'd say it's a little overpriced, but I like the industry. I like chip fabrication industry. And they actually specialize on artificial intelligence chips that focus on driverless cars, etc. And so I like that. That's why I like AMAT. It's kind of my favorite in this kind of space. Now, what is an entry point? That's the big question. Here is not my entry point. My entry point is somewhere in the mid-20s, and now it's about 32. So if we can get back to about 26 or so, I would love it. Here, I'm just kind of ho-hum on it.
Okay.
But glad you have it on your watch list, and you should. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. We're glad you're with us today. The invitation is always open to give us a call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have about 9 more minutes left in the show to get your call in live, 4 to 5 Pacific time. But you can always call after hours at 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime number. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 5 minutes left, so get your call in. Let's go to Lucy in San Francisco. How are you doing, Lucy?
Hi. I would like to ask you the ETF, ITA, to see if it's a good time to invest. Is it already gone too high?
Yeah, I think you're chasing it here. It's certainly gotten the Trump bump, but I think it'll unwind. And the reason I think it'll unwind is because I don't think Trump is really that big of a defense guy. I don't think he supports the defense industry or the veterans. But he's kind of a non-interventionist. You know, he talks about not toppling regimes. And I also think that there is massive waste within our military. And I could easily see him as a business guy saying, well, let's cut some of these programs that are just a waste. Because he's definitely get pushback from Congress on the budget. And that's a good place to reduce spending to work on infrastructure and building the wall or building, you know, the infrastructure that we need in our country. And I could easily see that. So I think the optimism around the Trump bump and the aerospace and defense industry, and for everyone else, she's looking at ITA, which is the iShares U.S. Aerospace and Defense ETF. I think that's gone way too far, and I would not be buying it up here.
Okay, thank you.
No problem, Lucy. That was ITA, Aerospace and Defense ETF. Now, housing permits plummeted last month. They were down about 18.7% from the previous month. That's the largest monthly decline since March of 2005. That was significantly below what economists were expected, which was only a 7% drop. Now, this did follow a 27% increase in the previous month. So there's some reversion to the mean there. But what was interesting was the plunge wasn't for single-family homes. It was actually multifamily. It dropped 45% in multifamily starts. And multifamily includes apartments, but it also includes townhomes, condos, etc. And that's what I was talking about when I was saying it's going to hurt the low end first the most, these high interest rates. And I think what's really interesting is mortgage rates weren't even above 4% for most of the month in November, but they will be for all of December. So I think it's going to be even worse in December. And to me, this is just a knock-on effect of higher interest rates. Now, permits didn't drop as much. And remember, permits are a little bit more forward-looking, right? Because you need to get a permits approved to build anything. But also, permits may not be used. You can get the permit to build, but unless you're starting, and that's where housing starts, we're talking about, those permits don't really matter. So permits fell 4.7%, and that was the consensus was it to drop 1.6%. Multifamily permits dropped 13% after a small increase last month. So multifamily is getting hit the most. And if we're going to see the housing market stay afloat with mortgage rates above 4% and higher on a consistent basis, we're going to need to see higher incomes. Incomes are going to need to rise. And this is what we've been talking about for a long time. This is why we saw the housing bubble in 2005 and 2006. And we said prices were going up 20%+, but incomes were not. And that was all because financing costs were so cheap, so low. It was easy to get a mortgage. And now and once that kind of unwound, when defaults started to rise, that's when you saw the fundamentals reassert themselves. And I think this is what's going to happen. The housing market with higher interest rates, fundamentals are going to start to reassert itself. And the fundamentals are incomes aren't going up that much. So don't expect a lot of upside for housing in the future, in the medium term, short term, especially with interest rates this high. Now, if interest rates get back down to 3.5%, you know, that kind of helps it a lot. But with mortgage rates above 4%, expect the low end to really be hurt the most. Now, our time is up for this hour. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve Pease and I, along with everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Please join us for our Tuesday session tomorrow when we talk about how your 401k plan will change in 2017. Why don't you join us again then?
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.